1210 on the Noon Business Lunch with me, John Williams. Tom Gimbel, the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, joins us today. Happy holidays, Tom.
Happy holidays, John Williams.
He's like that after a Bears win, don't you know?
I like to think I'm like that all the time, John, but I am happier after a Bears win.
You know, this isn't why we asked you to join us today, but I did want to comment on something, because last week you and I had a little bit of a conversation about the Bears' success vis-a-vis their management, and that's your area of expertise. And you said that it really does matter. And I remember sort of poo-pooing the fact that managers or coaches or owners have that much of an impact on the team. I said it's the players on the field. But, boy, the more I think about it, Tom, the more, no surprise here, you are right about that. This really does seem like a team with good players on the field, but also with good management of those players, that it really does make a difference, especially in the NFL, especially on the Bears team.
Yeah, I think in every level of sports it does, and I think it translates over to business. But, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from Bear Bryant, the old Alabama coach, who said, "A great coach can take your players and beat mine, and can take my players and beat yours." And I think that there is definitely a reason, whether it's business or sports, that when a new manager or coach or what have you comes in, that a department can immediately improve and change their outcomes and their results.
Yeah, but see, when I think about Tom Brady's career, I've often thought, well, what if he was at a different team? Or what if Bill Belichick was coaching a different team? Would Belichick have had the success that he did if he had been coaching the Bears all along? I doubt it. And would Tom Brady have been so successful if he didn't have that team around him? So the two of them are lauded as the greatest quarterback and coach of all time. But I think it had a little more to do with just the circumstances, the happenstance of them being all together at the same time.
There's no doubt about it. There's so many things that come into play that establishes greatness. And I think what I like more than anything in business and in sports is sustained greatness. And whether it's the Patriots or whether it was Alabama football or UCLA basketball in the 60s, yeah, all these different things that existed of great 10 years, John, or in business. If we look at Facebook and Meta and Google and all these great companies, and before that, Ford and GM and ExxonMobil and all these things, how did they sustain greatness? And it's about most importantly, it's about the people and the strategy and the culture and all those things. But also it's timing. It really is timing. And you have to realize, would Peyton Manning have been exponentially better, more Super Bowls, if Tom Brady hadn't been playing at the same time? Potentially. A lot of success has to do with not only where you land, but where other people are at the same time.
Hmm. The concept of being sick and not working versus being really sick and unable to go to work is on your mind. I think that's a good topic right now, because a lot of people are carrying bugs and they're sniffling and they've got a respiratory thing or whatever. And some of them don't come to work because I'm sick. And some of them tough it out, come to work, and make everybody else sick. where do you land on that thing?
Well, that really wasn't my angle, John, as you can imagine when I roll this out, is I thought it was more the people that have a sniffle and don't come to work, and they wouldn't have gotten everybody else sick. And a lot of times we wake up in the morning not feeling great,
yeah,
and by 10 or 11, we're feeling okay. But we've already taken the day off, or we've tried to beg to work remote or what have you. And the reason it struck me is I've been on my back for 8.5 days now.
Oh.
And, yeah, and actually have really not been able to get out of bed much. And went into the emergency room, got an IV on Sunday, actually. And on Saturday, I didn't go to the Bears game and couldn't even watch the second half on TV. I hate to admit it. I was so sick. And I realized that if I were going into an office right now, I couldn't have done it. And it made me think about the worker who, this is probably going to cause some ruffle your feathers a little bit, but the ones who cry wolf a little bit and are always seem to be able to not go in because they're sick. And I think if you always behave that way when you really get bad, then it really raises an eyebrow. And it shouldn't, because when you're really, really sick and you can't do it, you shouldn't. And no one should expect you to. But when you're just not, your tummy aches a little bit, you know what? Put on your big boy and big girl pants and go into the office.
What do you think of the manager saying, well, I'm sorry you're not feeling well, work from home, and don't take a sick day, but we still want you to be productive today.
I think you have to have a real relationship to be able to say and have honest candor in saying, listen, I'm going to do my best to be on that call or to try to get this done. I'm dying. I have a fever of 102. I haven't been able to sleep in 3 days. And to have honest feedback on that. There is a happy medium between helping out and being there for people and what you can and cannot physically do. And if you don't feel comfortable to say that, then I go back to what I've said to you before on the show. Maybe you work at the wrong place.
Well, but I really wonder what the amount of pain is that a person, let's say it's not 102, let's say 100. What's the average temperature now? I think they moved the goalpost on that. Is it 98.7? 98.6?
I think so.
Okay, so say your temperature is 99.8, and you don't feel well. So what's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I hear you, John, but I think I wake up every morning with a 99.8. I mean, I just think that there's all these people lean into feeling sick or they lean into feeling well. And I do think there's a psychological aspect of people who want to take the path of least resistance versus saying, maybe I can overcome this. And we've seen this with really serious illnesses, right? We've all read the studies, seen movies, documentaries, that when people have terminal diseases, that mental attitude actually plays a positive impact on recovery. You think that doesn't happen with common illnesses? I think it does. And I think if we want to fall into being sick and not working because we just don't want to go to work, we take that path and we feel worse. I say be positive about it.
You're starting to sound like that meme, the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Well, you're making me feel better in this conversation, John.
Hey, are you okay? I didn't realize you were laid up a little bit. Is it a backache or did you get some bug?
No, I've had the flu. It's been not stomach flu, head cold and terrible sore throat and cough. I mean, it really just terrible.
Horrible. It is the flu season. Tom, did you get your flu shot beforehand?
I did get my flu shot.
No kidding.
I don't know what the problem is.
You got laid up, huh?
It's been 8 days of just feeling terrible.
Well, you sound good on the radio, sir.
Well, I've got a face made for radio, John, so luckily...
it's always fun to talk to you. I'm sorry you were laid up. I wish you and the bear as well, mostly you right now. Thanks for joining us, Tom, and stay well.
Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year, but I'll talk to you next week.
Tom Gimbel is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. All right, now let's talk to Philip Weiss, the president of SciFarth at Work. Happy holidays to you, Philip. How are you?
Great, and same good wishes to you, John.
Okay. Have a good holiday off from work forever. What's the headline of this mean?
Yeah, this is the flip side of what you and I just shared, our happy tidings. In corporate America, we're seeing a rather sad development, which has been in the works for a few years now and just got worse in 2025. And that is, employers seem far less reluctant to lay people off, to give them their termination notices at the holiday season, starting in mid-November all the way through December. Already, John, the November statistics came out, and in the second half of the month, 25% more American workers were let go or laid off than during the same period last year. And December looks to only increase that statistical trend. I mean, as you probably know, a decade or so ago, that time period, the holiday, the end of the year, that was sort of sacrosanct. Companies did not want to deal that morale hit or disrespect their employees by simply acting like this is business as usual and we'll just show you the door. That protected time period no longer exists for many employees and employers. And that is a new reality and one that we and employers need to grapple with.
November and December, 25% more people lost their jobs this year than the same time last year. Is that right?
That's right. And what's really interesting is the signals from the corporate boardrooms seem to indicate that companies just feel that they have got to prioritize physical health, and no season is more important than any other. What they don't quite internalize, or if they do, they're just overlooking, is the fact that employees are really psychologically hit hard. In some cases, they've maybe not maxed out, but certainly put some pressure on their credit cards buying gifts, thinking the money will keep coming in. Mm. In other cases, John, the new year, which would have been a time of, you know, sort of positive celebration, becomes a time of kind of restless recalibration. What do I do next? How do I find a job? There is no real holiday season, in a sense, for those who are just let go. So it's an employment reality, but tough on the employees.
This will be harsh, but I can imagine that the company firing somebody in November or December, that will really hurt their feelings, but that's not our problem. You don't work for us anymore. I suppose, though, the more than collateral damage, though, is what about the employees that are left? That how does that affect them, their morale, their esprit de corps, their willingness to work hard for you when they see you chopping somebody at the knees on the 1st of December, right?
Yeah, that is such an important strategic point. I mean, it's not about only having a heart. It's about playing the right strategic game and card with all your employees. In fact, a company came to us for some help after the fact. It's a pretty big retailer. They had a gangbusters year. And at a recent headquarter holiday party, the CEO was glad-handing, handshaking everyone, talking to the entire team, over 100 people, about looking forward to an even greater year next year with all of you. Well, it wasn't all of you, because one key employee the next morning was called into HR's office and was packing his bags by lunchtime. And he spoke to us and said, you know what? For one thing, I did not think I could get the positive vibes and the pink slip within 24 hours. But it was also the fact that people watched him sadly carrying his box of few remaining personal items out the door. His entire department was rattled because one guy was let go, potentially at the wrong time of year.
So what's a boss to do?
Yeah, that is the holiday question. I mean, if you don't really need to do it before the new year, don't is always a good starting point. But if financially and or otherwise, it's just essential. You got to sort of lead with a certain amount of humanity and consistency. And that really means, John, acknowledging how difficult it is for everybody and anybody that gets the message. We don't want to hide the ball on that.
Yeah.
And some companies are saying, you know, we'll boost the bonus. People know what they probably are entitled to when they leave. Let's give them that extra spending money this December. That actually is a real important financial win, but it cushions a psychological blow as well. And if you can, give them some help. You know, outplacement services work even in the blue-collar and entry-level spheres, and that gives people this sort of game plan, gives them allies, gives them a job to do while they're looking for a job, and that really can hold them over until January, February, March. So there are strategies that work if you're willing to think ahead.
I'm glad you said some of that. I have seen people get fired, and then when you discover the terms under which you left, you understand that the company was considerate to them. You know, they gave an extra 2 weeks if it was only supposed to be 2 weeks, or they rolled over vacation time for them. I don't know. I don't remember the exact specifics, but I've seen it done well, and I've seen it done not so well. And it can be done with, as you said, a measure of humanity, if not generosity, for the person that's losing their job. Philip Weiss is the president of Seyfarth at Work, SeyFarth. Seyfarth at Work. Well, have a good holiday, Philip. It's nice to talk
to you. Thank you. Yeah, and Happy New Year.
Now it's time for us to continue on the Noon Business Lunch. This is John Williams. Neil Fisher is our producer today, and Craig Bolanos, the co-founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners. GetRetiredStayRetired.com is the website, joins us now. Happy holidays, my friend. How are you today, Craig?
Yes, happy holidays. I'm doing just fine. I think I hear those sleigh bells a-jingling, John. I think the Santa Claus rally is going to remain intact at the end of the year, and I'm thanking that strong GDP report for helping to usher it in.
Is this year's version of the Santa Claus rally just not the market dropping off? I mean, it's not like we've seen a real big run-up here, but we didn't have any fall-off, really.
No, we haven't had the fall off. And again, I don't look for that Santa Claus rally to unfold until the last several trading days of the year. So let's see what Friday, the 26th, 29th, 30th, and 31st usher in. That's when I'll be paying attention to those last couple trading days of 2025 and the first 2 days of 2026. So I think it's a decent time on low volume for people to put some of those holiday bonuses to work or rebalance those 401ks if they haven't done so.
What motivates the market on the last few trading days? Is it tax purposes or what?
You know, I think it's a combination of this. Number one, it's just sentiment, John. If everybody knows that since 1950 there's a 73% chance of a Santa Claus rally,
really?
There ends up being some portfolio positioning around it. Now, no one's looking for meteoric gains. Maybe we should all just be happy and maybe we should be content, as you alluded to, that it looks like there's no reason for a major market sell-off going into the end of the year. But I think this is a reminder for people just to acknowledge the three-peat we've had, double-digit gains in broad-based U.S. equities in 23, 24, 25. Will we get a four-peat? Well, we'll see.
You mean, will 2026 be as good as 25 was?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, and I think we have a decent recipe. I mean, some of the AI enthusiasm, it's waning. Some of the decisions on whether we're going to get as many rate cuts as we want from the Fed in 2026, they're called into question. But ultimately, if economic growth remains robust and remains stable, that's still the most important ingredient of the three. And right now, it looks like economic growth is exactly that, growing.
Talk me off this ledge then, because I think the elephant in the room is the Supreme Court ruling on tariffs, IEEPA. What do you think of that?
I think that is one of the major elephants in the room, but we've been talking about it ever since Liberation Day earlier this year. I go on record saying tariffs are still here to stay because there's a number of ways for this administration to go ahead and get them in full force and effect, right? Now, what are we talking about, you know, in terms of refunds and all these different things? I don't know. I'm going to let policy administrators sort it out, but if the market thought it was going to be gloom and doom relative to the Supreme Court, you know, SCOTUS, we would be seeing red on my computer screens, not green.
Yeah, right. And regardless of the wisdom of them or the math on them, like, am I paying for this or is China paying for this? The market doesn't seem to be overly concerned with that because those tariffs are in place. We are buying and paying, and there wasn't this catastrophe that some of the people predicted.
No, you know, the catastrophe hasn't materialized. Now, never say never. You know, we're still early into this game, aren't we, John? I mean, I remember the speech from the Rose Garden in April. That was only 8 months ago. So time's going to prove out and history is eventually going to be written. But right now, it doesn't appear to be financial Armageddon the way the bill is being split between consumers, producers, and importers.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens here. The third quarter GDP showed the economy grew at, what was the number, 4.3%?
Yeah, 4.3, and we were thinking 3.2, 3.3 and change. Now, the data is a little bit stale, but you got to be excited about the fact that in the fall, the U.S. economy continued to hum. I think that's good news for everybody.
If it, in fact, did continue to hum. Right. I mean, we're missing 6 weeks of data here, right?
We are. Nothing's perfect, and everyone's going to question the numbers. I understand the reason for questioning the numbers, and certainly the longest government shutdown ever recorded in modern history didn't help anybody with what I call stale data and maybe counting the beans correctly, but at least the trend is our friend, and that's what investors are paying attention to.
And can you talk a little bit about inflation relative to unemployment? I mean, those are two numbers that the Fed watches and we talk about. What are you seeing there?
Well, you know what? When I think about the inflation data, there's a couple of pieces. One, clearly the Fed has moved off of their 2% mandated target. I mean, John, I shouldn't chuckle when I say that, but I think the Fed is so worried about this headline unemployment number, right? I mean, we moved all the way up to 4.6%. The headline unemployment is certainly significantly higher than when Donald Trump took his term here for the second go around. And I just think if this economy continues, there is going to remain some upward pressure on inflation. But if you said to me, am I okay with the year-over-year change in the most recent inflation data? Yeah, I am, because the market's okay with it, and we're running at an okay pace. I mean, PCE at 2.8%, you know, definitely not 2%, but I'll take 2.8% for personal consumption expenditure. That, again, is the Fed's preferred measure of inflation.
PCE, what does that mean again?
Personal consumption expenditure.
And what does that relate to? What does that reflect?
It's just the Fed's preferred measure of inflation, right, John? We've got CPI, we've got core, you know, which excludes the volatility of food and energy. And then I guess this just tells me that the Fed continues to pay attention to PCE, because this is an economy that is still based on the consumer. And I do think when we count the scorecard for consumer spending, what I call holiday season, I think it's going to be yet again a gangbuster year. Not maybe as much at the in-person retailer. I got to tell you, Woodfield Mall felt pretty barren on the 22nd of December when I was there last night.
Oh, really?
In the suburbs. Really? Oh, it did. It did. And I asked the cashier at a couple of stores I went to, not to name stores, and he said, you know, we seem to be slower year over year, but he goes, that's in person. I got to tell you, based on the volume of return in exchanges, this young gentleman said to me, there's so much business being done online, and then people using that concept of omni-channel to do the exchanges. They order multiple sizes, and I don't know about you, but my neighbor's house is full of corrugated cardboard, as is mine.
Yeah, I haven't been to Oak Brook lately, but friends of mine were going out there. My niece was going out there, and I said, good luck finding a place to park, because our experience has been Oak Brook seems to be on another planet. It's always busy. It's a great mall anyway, and at Christmas time, it's just a zoo. But what I'm also hearing is that a lot of that consumerism, a lot of those retail sales are being driven by the top half of the K, that there are too many people who are not shopping. They don't have the discretionary income. They're not even running it up on their credit cards as much. And the other half of the economy, or whatever the percentage is, they're the ones that are driving this. Do you see that? And what's your thought about that?
Well, I think the data supports it, and you and I have long talked about it on your show. I mean, we have a full-fledged K-shaped economy. You know, some of that kind of disappeared in 23 and 24 because we had a lot of wage growth, what I call growth in the per hour that a lot of blue-collar laborers were getting, so it kind of went away. But this thing is deservedly back in the news because a lot of people worry that the wealthiest people aren't going to be able to sustain this. And should the layoffs continue to worsen and that unemployment rise, then you got those middle and lower-income Americans. If they pull back sharply on spending, which I don't think is happening, which hasn't happened yet, then all of a sudden, yeah, the bottom of the K could pull down the top. And I don't know how we go ahead and start, you know, closing that divide. It's not even a divide now, John. It's a great chasm. I mean, if you haven't had an opportunity to buy a house, to buy real estate, if you didn't yet have an opportunity to build up your 401k, boy, people missed it. And it's just tough.
We're talking to Craig Bolanos, the co-founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners. GetRetiredStayRetired.com is the website. By the way, you and I were talking about the market, and you sounded pretty upbeat about it all. But some of our listeners are saying things like this, Craig, that the market is one thing, but what about the way other people are living their lives? Not everybody is in the market and riding the good wave that 2025 has been. I wonder what we would say to those people who are closer to their money and aren't fully vested the way you were talking.
No, I get it, John. It goes back to what you and I just were talking about, that K-shaped recovery. How else do I explain a great GDP number? How else do I explain a healthy 64,000 jobs created in November? And then today you have five consecutive months now. This is the fifth consecutive month of declining consumer confidence. And I get it. Every time you go to the grocery store, you're reminded. Every time you buy a toy for the holiday season, boy, you're reminded. And we just got to find a way to bridge this chasm on the K-shaped recovery, because I feel it. There's lots of people who aren't wealthy that are really struggling out there. I just don't know what the solution is.
Yeah. Well, affordability is an issue. I don't want to talk politics with you here, but it is also a political consideration. And I saw a chart the other day of how often the administration has used the word affordability in official releases or postings. And in June, July, August, it never comes up. And then in November, the president mocked the notion of affordability as something that the mainstream media has created. He said affordability isn't even a word. And then November to today, they've used the word 78 times. And the president gave last week an address where he talked about the affordability issue. I don't know what my question is now, except that the president obviously recognizes that this is a very mainstream, real issue. It's not economics talk. It's people struggling to pay bills.
That's right, because you can't stay in office and you can't win offices running on facts. It's all about feelings. Emotion is such a driver. It's the emotional dynamics of money. And when we're stuck in this low hire, low fire, although it's obviously more fire economy, I get it. The only thing I'm excited about for some of that 2026 outlook, John, is I do think people are going to have significantly increased year over year tax refunds coming in the spring of 26, courtesy of that increased child tax credit, courtesy of the change to the taxation of tip income, the change to the taxation of overtime income. I think that money's going to be arriving just in time to keep the party going, but none of those words are going to soothe the mom, dad, grandma, grandpas, the American citizens out there who are struggling relative to the same quality of living because of affordability that they had just some 3 to 4 years ago.
I appreciate you bringing that up. Tax returns are expected to be significantly better this coming spring than they have been for a long time for people, in part because while the tax code change, that is the big beautiful bill, was passed, the government continued to take out the previous amount of money they were taking out of your paycheck, and unless you changed it. And therefore, with a more generous plan after the first of the year, people may have been paying more than they realized relative to what they will owe, that tax returns are expected to be bigger this year.
They are. It's not going to help everybody, but I mean, if you're a senior, someone retired who's Medicare eligible, you got that $6,000 bonus. You live in a state with high property taxes, you got the raise in the SALT cap. You have tip income you have tip income, overtime income, you have a child 17 or under. All of these things are accretive, and it's going to add up.
I'm out of time. It's always nice to talk to you, and I hope you'll continue to join us. We're here next week. We'll be here next year. It's always good to hear your voice, Craig.
Thanks so much, John. Happy holidays to you and all the listeners at WGN.
You can find Craig Bolanos at GetRetiredStayRetired.com. 1257 News in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom's next.